We still call them report cards, but when's the last time you saw information from or about a school on an actual card? Anyway, last week, Oregon schools got their so-called report cards from the state. It was the first use of a new system with more grade levels, 5 now, instead of the previous 3. So some districts are celebrating level 5 rankings, some working to improve level 1 or 2 rankings. How does it all work? We put those questions to Rob Saxton, who is the Deputy State School Superintendent in Oregon and our guest here on The Exchange. Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Jeffrey. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you. Forgive a few people for not being able to track the changes. How long was the old 3-level system in effect?
Oh, boy. The old 3-level system, how long was it in effect? I think it was since about 1998, mm-hmm. I believe.
All right, so about 15 years or so, anyway.
Yeah.
Something like that. So why change? I mean, does this bring Oregon into line with a federal standard or something?
Well, you know, we're part of No Child Left Behind with the federal government, of course, and the federal government offered waivers from No Child Left Behind, and one of the requirements was for Oregon to change its report card as part of achieving or receiving that waiver, and it was time for us to change the report card anyway. Some of the information and the form in which it came was a little bit outdated, and so we wanted to really engage the public and talk about what they were looking for in a report card so that it had a better visual and that it had a little more meaning about how their school was performing.
Is there more information taken into account to compile the report cards? I mean, I ask this because I did take a look at some of the offer, and believe me, you offer all the data that the Oregon Department of Education counted somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 different columns of information. So is there more actually being compiled to make these report cards now?
There is. We have more data than we used to have, and so we're taking a lot of that into account. And then even beyond what you see here, there's also a significant other data that folks can access. I think that we're just in the process of getting that up and running. And you can access it through our website or through the Open Books Project with Chalkboard. So we've partnered with Chalkboard to have quite a bit of other data if people really wanted to dig into what's happening in their local schools.
So level 1 is considered a failing grade, level 5 the best. Can you walk us through, Rob Saxton, what each level means to a school receiving it?
Sure. So if you're a level 1, it really means that you're in the bottom 5% of all schools in the state. And if you're a level 2, you're in the next lowest 10%. A level 3 would be the next lowest 30% of schools. A level 4 would be those that fall between 44% and 90% of schools, and level 5 is in the top 10%.
Top 10%. Okay. So do the levels then expand or contract? I mean, if you define level 1 as the bottom 5%, the performance of other schools relative to you will decide whether or not you're level 1 or just eke over the line into level 2?
That's correct. So, you know, it's a little bit different kind of a way to think about this, and it is that I mean, there's always going to be a certain number of level 1 schools when you do it based on a percentage, and so it's relative to other schools for sure.
So something like what we used to call the bell curve, wasn't it, where a certain number of people will get A's and a certain number will get F's?
It is, except that, you know, if you think about how this is put together, really our bell curve is a little bit skewed. It isn't a perfect bell curve. About 55% of schools are either level 4 or level 5, so really, you know, the halfway point is actually between level 3 and level 4.
All right. So would level 3 then, and these come also with a rating compared to similar schools, and so I see about average, above average, below average. So is level 3 considered about average?
Level 3 is actually considered below average, mm-hmm. and level 4 is considered average, just above average, actually.
So in that sense, there's probably 3 grades most school systems don't want to see their schools getting, and 2 they do.
That's correct. 1, 2, and 3, you don't want to be in those, and 4 and 5, you do.
All right. And so, Rob Saxton, is this all measured in the school year finished last June?
Yes. This is for the 2012-2013 school year.
So run us through then what some of the major areas measured are. What are some of the things that are plugged into the equation to figure out how well a school is doing?
Yes. So for our elementary schools, 50% of the score is on academic growth, so how much growth a student showed over the course of a given year. 25% is what we call subgroup growth, and our subgroups are students who are economically disadvantaged, English language learners, students with disabilities, American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian, Black, African American, Hispanic, Latino, multiracial. So we've broken it out quite a bit with that subgroup growth. So really for elementary schools, with 50% being academic growth, 25% being subgroup growth, it's really like 75% of it is centered around growth. And then 25% is just pure academic achievement. So what percentage of your students met the Oregon benchmark standard? And then high school is a little bit different. High school is centered more on graduation than on growth. So 35% is graduation, 15% on subgroup graduation, and then 20% on academic achievement, 20% on academic growth, and 10% on subgroup growth. So it really is about 50% on graduation and 30% on growth, and then 20% on academic achievement.
Rob Saxton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Deputy Oregon State School Superintendent. We were talking about the school report cards issued last week, which give five different ratings from level 1 all the way up to level 5. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, talk about the overall process or what you might have seen in schools in your neighborhood. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Rob Saxton, is the information then generally already there being generated by the schools? Is there any additional work that has to be done by schools, by teachers, administrators, anyone, to compile the information that makes the report cards?
There are a couple things. This year, for the first time, we've provided the opportunity for folks to write a little piece about what's happening at their school. And so the principal has some space where they can write a letter and talk about what's happening and perhaps put in a few of the high points as they see them about what their school and their district looks like. On the district report card, the superintendent has the opportunity to do that. And then there also is a section on curriculum and learning where we really say, what are some of the special things that you offer at your school around, like academic support, academic enrichment, extracurricular activities, or career and technical education opportunities for students?
You know, I did grab a couple of the report cards out here, and I've got the Medford School District and the Eugene School District in my hand, and I circled a bunch of the ones and the fives, and it seems like a lot of these often fall. We're talking the ones being level 1, below average, level 5, above average, the top and bottom of the ranking scale. Often these seem to happen at charter schools. There's not a lot of in-between with charter schools or alternative education centers where they're either really, really good or not.
Interesting. We're working like crazy to get this report card out, and we haven't really stopped to analyze the data to that degree, but that will be an interesting thing for me to look at for sure.
And so how much shading within levels, Rob Saxton? I mean, could there be, for example, a school that has a fabulous special education performance but is so-so elsewhere, ends up in the same level with a school that essentially is just the exact opposite, where their special education is not so good but academics are just great?
Yes. I mean, that certainly can happen when you put it all into the formula and then you look at what the ranking looks like. That is one of the reasons that we've, you know, provided breakout on all of those different indicators. It's about the third page back on the report card. It's actually about a four-page document when you get the whole thing. And so what we have there is what their school performance looks like, what their performance compared to other Oregon, or what all Oregon schools' performance looks like, and then what their performance looks like compared to other schools that demographically are a lot like them.
There's an additional category here, a focus or priority school that turns up in these report cards. What does that mean?
So a focus school is a school that receives Title I funds, and Title I funds means that it's a low-income school. And so if you receive Title I funds and you're in the bottom 5%, you could be identified as a priority school. And so we didn't identify priority and focus schools, new priority and focus schools this year. We used last year's data to identify priority schools. And then the next level two schools, or the next lowest 10% that are Title I, are called focus schools. We identified those schools a year ago and then have been working really intensely with them to give them support on how to get better outcomes with students. And so that's been an undertaking by the Department of Education. And those schools are in their second year of a four-year improvement process. And that also was part of the requirement of our federal waiver from No Child Left Behind.
And what kinds of support does the state give then?
So what we've done is we've gone in and provided them with some tools and some documents and some training around how to evaluate their own program and what they look like and see if they could identify some of the areas where they might need to improve. And then we also sent in outside teams that looked at the same thing, and so that we had two different looks at it, sort of what internally they thought the issue might be, and then an external review of what that looked like, and then to bring those two together and have some conversation about what might be the issue that's holding them back. And then they've gotten some additional dollars in order to work at this. We've given some staff development about improved practices, both in leadership and also for teachers within the classroom. And then what we've asked them to do is put together a plan, and it's a really detailed plan about these are our goals, and this is what we're going to implement in order to achieve an increase. And we've provided each principal with a mentor or a person who comes in and helps coach them and their staff about some of the things that they could do, and then also to make sure that the plan is implemented as intended. And so it's this year, most of last year was spent in the planning and review process, and then this year is the implementation process. And we've asked districts to expend a fair number of their Title I funds in those schools specifically in an effort to support those plans. And then we've provided, as I said, some additional dollars to help with that too.
We're talking Oregon School Report Cards with Rob Saxton, the Deputy State School Superintendent. Here's Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, good morning. The question is, have you or your staff looked at any of Posse Solberg's books? That's PASISOLBERG, Finnish school system, which has been recently reviewed in the last few years as being one of the best school systems in the world for the keeping people happier after they get out of it. Posse Solberg has written a number of books, and the Finnish school system is there as an example to hold up to the rest of the world.
All right. Thanks for the information, Carter. Appreciate it. Anything you'd heard about, Rob Saxton?
Yes. Actually, thank you, Carter. Great question. Yes, have looked at those books and actually have had some folks from Finland come here and make some presentations and taken a hard look at the work that's going on in Finnish schools. It's a very interesting and it's a really pretty different way of approaching education in Finnish schools than in Oregon, although there are some interesting parallels in that our geographic and population size is fairly similar to that of Finland. Their natural resource base as compared to ours is significantly different. They have very little natural resource, and Oregon has significant. But their education system is different to some degree, too. Less focus on testing, much more autonomy for teachers, lots of planning time and professional time for teachers to plan up what they're doing. And in fact, really in a lot of ways, what happens in their K-12 schools looks much more similar when it comes to planning and that kind of thing as to the way our colleges do. Very interesting model, really good results. Over the past 5 years, I think they've been rated number one two of those 5 years, and I think they were number two on the other 3 years on international comparisons. So certainly some lessons to be learned there, and there are many similarities and some differences. Certainly a much more homogenous society than ours is. And so,
which raises the overall question that I'm sure gets asked a lot of educators, which is, can you take these things that they learned there and put them to work here? I mean, is good education no matter what? Or is it so different that forget what works in Finland working in Oregon, would what works in Vermont work in Oregon?
Well, there's all of that, right? Certainly, we need to look at what other states are doing as well, because there are some states, I think Massachusetts is a really good example, where, their outcomes and their the way that they've sort of stuck to their plan. They've had a plan in place really since about 1992, and their performance looks very good and compares well with that of Finland. They have focused some additional resource and lots of planning and that kind of thing around the work that they're doing. And so we're in regular contact with both them. And then Kentucky is also a very interesting state right now to look at what they're doing. But I think there are lessons to be learned from all of those, and that we need to look at those, understand them, and then also consider what's uniquely Oregon and make sure that we make sense of it for Oregon when we translate it.
Rob Saxton, based on what you said a few moments ago about the just working to crank out the report cards, I don't know if you've had a chance to really let it all sort of soak in, but are there any particular impressions or surprises that really jump out from this batch of report cards?
The biggest difference for me on this batch of report cards, in the past when we've looked at our report cards, what you would see is that almost all of the report card was about students meeting the academic benchmark that we had set. So just one that's easy for me to remember is a 236 in the 11th grade on the Oregon Assessment of Knowledge and Skills. So if you score a 236, you meet the benchmark, and if you score below it, you do not. And so what we found on our old report cards is oftentimes, because they were so closely tied to that, oftentimes whether a school was rated well or not was closely tied to their socioeconomics. So in schools where more affluent students attended, oftentimes it looked like those schools were significantly outperforming other schools. And this new report card takes that into account to a much lower degree, 25% at the elementary level and 20% at the high school level, around just pure academic achievement. And what's really focused on here is growth. And the growth model that folks here at the department put together, we kind of stole a lot of it from Colorado schools. But it really is a great model to look at, and it's something that we are very interested in, and I think that parents are interested in, and it is, where was your child in the previous year learning-wise, and what did our assessments say about how much learning they had been able to accomplish? And then over the course of this year, how much learning growth did they experience? And what we're really interested in is, on a comparator basis, how much growth a school got with a student on average. And so this report card is much more reflective of, hey, you did a great job of taking students from where they were and advancing them a significant amount over the course of the last year.
Rob Saxton is the Deputy State School Superintendent for the state of Oregon. We've been talking about the report cards recently issued to Oregon schools. Rob, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Good to have you. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll talk about God and politics in the next hour.